And what I'd like to talk to you about here are some of the character traits initially, and then some of the skills of peak performers. Because after I did work with the Army, I started going out and interviewing peak performers, sort of like, how many of you read the book In Search of Excellence, or at least aware of it? Peters and the other gentleman went out and started studying companies to find out what made the finest companies. Well, myself and other people like me went out and studied the most successful individuals to find out what did they have in common. And we could do a 10-day seminar on all the things that they do that make them effective. But I'd like to start out this little session here by sharing with you what I call the 7 fundamental character traits of a champion. These seem to be the 7 key elements that people have that succeed on a major scale. I'm talking about, you know, the curiosity that made me wonder what makes a person a Steven Spielberg or a Bruce Springsteen. What makes them such a huge cultural success? What makes a John F. Kennedy or a Martin Luther King? What do these people have in common in terms of the way they looked at the world, their belief structures, their values, the way they operated, all of those different things? And I got a chance to interview some pretty powerful and effective people. What makes a Lee Iacocca? What makes a Bill Cosby? What makes a Ronald Reagan? What makes these people tick? What do they seem to have in common that makes them not just successful, but a super success? And so let's go through those 7 items. They're very simple, but I think you can see how you can relate them to your own business. And let's start with the first one here. And the first one is called passion. The first thing that every single one of these people seems to have in common is that they have a passion. They have something that drives them. The thing I just began to speak about a little bit earlier here. That is, they have something that gets them up early and keeps them up late. Something that pushes them to use all that they have as a human being. Passion is what you want in your personal relationships. Passion is what you want in your job. Passion is what I have the good experience of having in Ira here. When he talks about this company, he's passionate. He talks about, I love these people. I love this. Yes, I want to make money. Yes, I want to do all these other things, but I just love. I'm proud of this organization. I'm proud of these people. This is my family. And when he talks about it, he doesn't say, I'm proud of this organization. This is really great. I'm really proud of this. I like my family. He has passion about what he's talking about, and that's why he's successful. The same thing is true of a Spielberg, a Springsteen, a Kennedy, a King, a Reagan, a Pete Rose. What makes Pete Rose decide to slide into second base like he was a rookie, even in these days? What does it? Passion. Now, we all know about this. You go, well, that's real basic. But the question is, then how do you generate passion when you're not passionate? I mean, every one of us have times when we wake up in the morning, we don't jump up and go, oh, boy, I'm not going to go out and be able to market carpets today. I am so excited. It doesn't always happen that way, does it? There are times when you wake up and go, not another Monday. I don't care who you are, how motivated you are. That's called life. But also life is that you've got to produce the results. And if you don't, it's going to be a long day. If you don't go out there and if you're not passionate, you're not going to be effective and you're not going to feel good about yourself. Okay, let's go to the next section here. We've talked about the importance of passion in terms of working with people who are very, very effective. One of the fundamental character traits. Here's the second character trait, belief. Belief. People who succeed obviously have a set of belief structures that are quite different than other people. In fact, here during the break, a couple of people were coming up to me and with a certain level of disbelief. I mean, they wanted to believe, and they said, yeah, I trust you and everything else, but, you know, if therapists have been trying to get these results for years, how could this suddenly work? It's like really hard for them to some people to grasp that that could happen. Again, that's why I try to use a metaphor like with flying with you. You know, it's like really hard for people to imagine we could fly also when we'd never flown for years and people had tried. But once you understand how something works, you can duplicate that process over and over again. Beliefs are written about in every religious book on the planet. You know why? Because they're a law. They're how the brain works. I don't care what the religion is, it all talks about the power of belief. Belief, I call the gateway to power, because your belief structures are going to determine how you behave, how effective you are, what you're willing to attempt, what you're not willing to attempt. Let me give you an example. How many of you have ever done something where somebody says to you, could you please get me the salt? And you start to walk in the kitchen, and as you're walking in the kitchen, you say to yourself, I don't know where the salt is. And sure enough, you open the cupboard, you look up and down, and finally you yell, I can't find the salt, it's not here. The person walks right in the kitchen, stands right next to you, reaches right in front of your face, and goes, what is this? And what is it? The salt. Now, did your eyes see the salt? Oh, yes, they did. Your eyes did see the salt. But you are not allowed to consciously perceive the salt, because when that input came into your brain, you had already programmed your brain with the belief, I don't know where the salt is. So your brain went, he said he doesn't know where it is, we don't want to make him into a liar, boom, and block that. In psychology, we call this a scotoma, or a blind spot, and we do this all the time. A lot of people say, well, what if I know my limitations, can I still do this? No, you can't. See, a lot of people who don't know their limitations, as a result, don't experience these limitations. There's a neat story that I put in one of my books, and that was about this young man who's in college and falls asleep in his math class. It's a true story. He wakes up at the end of class, and he sees these two math problems written up on the board. So he quickly copies them down, experiencing or thinking that they must be the homework. He goes away, and he works on these math problems for a full day. After all day long of just going crazy and unable to figure the math problems out, he finally figures one of them out. He comes back to class early, a week later, right before class, and goes to the teacher and says, "That is the toughest homework you've ever given us that I've ever imagined." And the guy and the teacher said, "What homework? I didn't give you any this week." He said, "Well, those two math problems." He said, "What two math problems?" And he pulled them out, and he showed him the two math problems. And one of the two math problems he solved was supposed to be one of the two math problems that are supposedly unsolvable, and he did it, and he did it effectively. One of the major breakthroughs in mathematics. Now, he just didn't know that he couldn't do it, and so he put in and produced the result. And you'd be surprised how often that happens. Now, our beliefs, again, have a major impact. Let me show you something I call a success cycle. I used to look at people, as I told you, and wonder, why do some people succeed while other people who have greater ability, greater talent, fail? Why is it somebody who has less skill could succeed? And I found that belief and passion, obviously, are two of the major impacts. And I create a little cycle here to describe what I think makes the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. And again, when I talk about rich or poor, I'm not just talking financial. Lots of people have a lot of money who are very poor. There are also a lot of people who have a lot of money who are very wealthy because they have emotional wealth, social, spiritual, intellectual, physical, and financial. But here's why the rich get richer and the poor get poorer, in my opinion. And you might want to draw this in your notes. Draw four squares like this. And up in the top left-hand corner, write the word potential. In the top right-hand corner, write the word action. In the bottom right-hand corner, write the word results. And in the bottom left-hand corner, write the word belief. And draw arrows amongst them so it's a continuous cycle that never ends. And I think this will give you a demonstration of the power of beliefs on your ability and your skill. Let me ask you a question. What is the potential of any human being? What do you think?
Unlimited. Unlimited, huh?
Okay, unlimited, yes. Most of us believe that intellectually. I mean, how many of you in this room believe you tap in less than 10% of your brain? Let me see a show of hands. Yeah, most people brag about it. They go, "Yeah, man, I tap less than 10% of my brain." Okay, that's not something you want to brag about, but it's true. Most of us tap less than that. So the potential is there. What are the results of most people in life? Do they reflect an unlimited potential? No, for most people, not. What makes the difference between potential and results? Well, part of it definitely is action, obviously. So we have potential, but how much action, how much of that potential we actually use is going to determine the kind of results we get. But what determines whether we take action or not, whether we use our potential and the kind of results we invariably produce is our beliefs. Because our beliefs are going to determine how much of that potential we actively use. It's there. But our beliefs are like the filters that tell us whether salt is there or not. There are some old corny phrases that are worthy of repeating because they're also true. And one that I remember from the books that I read was, whether you say you can or whether you say you can't, you're right. Because as soon as you say you can't do something, immediately that filters how much of your potential you can use, the kinds of actions you're willing to take, because if it's not going to work, why even try? And it's going to, obviously, when you take little potential, little action, what kind of results are you going to get? Little results or none. And when you get little results, what does that do to your belief about what you're capable of? Your brain goes, see. And all of a sudden, now you believe you have even less potential. You tap even less. You take even less action because obviously you got lousy results in the past. You get even worse results. And what does that do to your belief? Your brain goes, see. And pretty soon you find yourself trying to figure out how you can do the very least and get by. And that's a really dangerous place to be because what that does is it makes you an incredibly unhappy person. Now, the opposite is also true. That's how the poor get poorer, right? How do the rich get richer? Well, for some reason, something happens in a person's life where they develop a belief that they have tremendous potential, enough so that they'll actually take action towards it. Maybe they got a result. Maybe by accident, they tried something and it worked. And then the brain went, wow, you can do that. And then it made them tap more potential, take more action and get great results. And then what happened is when they got great results, what did that do to their brain? The brain went, see? You can do this. And all of a sudden, they were willing to take more potential, take even more action. And when you take a lot of action on a lot of potential, what tends to be results? A lot of great results. And then your brain goes, see? And now you're on the upward spiral that makes people get better and stronger and happier and healthier and wealthier so that all of a sudden they keep getting better and better and better. And this is what happened in my life. I was on the downward spiral, right? I told you about it. And I switched to the upward spiral. Now, how do you make that switch? Well, some people say, well, I'm going to change my potential. Well, that's kind of ridiculous. The potential's always there. Other people say, well, I'm going to change my actions. That's what I try to do. I was in sales, so I decided to go out and make 100 cold calls. So I walked in people's doors, knocked on their door, looked them in the eye and said, you wouldn't want to buy anything from me, would you? Now, I didn't say that verbally, but 55% of communication is what? What is it? Physiology. And my physiology was saying, you wouldn't want to buy anything from me, would me? Even though my words were saying something else, right? And that didn't work. My life didn't change until I learned how to change my beliefs. And that basically, there are lots of ways to change beliefs, and I'm not going to go through them all because that's not what the seminar is about, but I want to at least give you one simple one because we've already talked about it. Belief is nothing but a state of mind, isn't it? Belief is a feeling of certainty, isn't it? Isn't that what a belief is? A total feeling of certainty or congruency? Now, is that not governed by physiology as well? Sure it is. Sit right now the way you'd be sitting if you're kind of unsure about something. Like you're going to try and do something, but you don't think you can succeed. Just try and adjust your body. How would you be sitting if you were not sure? You know, and you're not quite positive, and you're not quite sure, and how would you breathe, and what would your voice sound like in your head when you're talking to yourself about something you're not sure? What do you think? Now, from that state, go to a state where you totally believe something is true. You are totally certain that something is true. Sit the way you'd be sitting if you were certain. You absolutely knew something was going to happen. There was no doubt in your mind. You were totally unified. What would the voice inside of your head sound like? Yeah. And there's a difference in tonality, isn't there? See, there's a huge difference in how you talk to yourself and just the tonality. Not just what you say, but how you say it. See, one change in tonality can change your entire state. How many of you have one of these little voices that when you start to believe you can do something, a little voice comes up and goes, you can't do that. How many of you have one of those voices? Any of you here? Yeah. Sometimes we try and fight the voice, right? And go, yes, I can. No, you can't. Yes, you can. No, I can't. That doesn't work. What you have to learn to do is change how you're hearing the voice and not fight it and just take control of it by changing its tonality. So if the voice starts to say, you can't do that, or you're not good enough, or you don't have enough strength, or whatever it says, change the voice tone so it sounds like Pluto or Mickey Mouse. So now it goes, you can't do that. And what happens is you'll giggle, and when you giggle, you're no longer stopped, because you're in a state of mind where you're laughing, where you're willing to tap your potential. Or change the tonality so that it has a sexual tone to it. So instead of it saying, you can't do that, now it says, you can't do that. How many of you feel like doing it now? So the tone of your voice makes a big difference. So again, belief is something that can be impacted very quickly and very easily by how you use your physiology and how you communicate to yourself. And there are ways of programming in beliefs as well. And if you're interested in finding out more, go study it. Get a book, come to a seminar, do whatever. But there are ways to do it. And you have one way right now that you can make a change in a few seconds just by changing your state of mind. That's all it takes, in essence. Now, good example, one more belief I was sharing with somebody in the back there. Is the idea of this four-minute mile. You know the story about Roger Bannister? Since the time of the ancient Greeks, man has been trying to run a four-minute mile. Did you know that long that it's been a goal for mankind? But the bottom line is, it's always been taught and believed that the physical body of a human being could never move that fast. In fact, during the time of the Greeks, they actually would tie men to horses and have the horses run to try and speed them up, which was an interesting process when they landed, as you can imagine. Now, all of a sudden, one man breaks it. Was it because his body was so much stronger than anyone before him? No, his body was in peak performance, no doubt about it. But the difference between him and other people is he changed the limits in his mind first, and then his physical body responded. He changed how he represented what a four-minute mile meant, and that's how he broke it. Now, most of us know the story. What you may not know about the story is that within 1 month after Roger Bannister running a four-minute mile, do you know how many people did break a four-minute mile? How many? No. 32. Nobody in history had done it, and in 1 month, 32. Within 1 year, over 300 and I think 56, 57, I've forgotten the exact number. I mean, you can correct me on these numbers, but I know it was over 300 in 1 year. Now, how do you explain that? There's only one way to explain it. The physical capabilities were always there, but belief said that they weren't. People knew their limitations, and so they lived them. Now, let me show you a quick example of this. Stand up, if you will. Now, I'm not suggesting to you, by the way, well, we'll talk about this in a second. First, try this. Put your feet together, if you would, facing straight ahead. And I want to show you how, just by changing how you're representing something in your head, it'll change the way your body even functions. So let's try this. Put your feet together. Put your hand, your right hand, straight out with your finger pointed straight ahead. And when I say now, I'm going to ask you to turn in your legs. Just when I say now, don't do it until I say now. You're going to turn comfortably and see where your finger just ends up without turning your legs, okay? Turn clockwise and notice where your finger stops. Okay, as comfortably as you can. There you go. Notice where it stops. Okay, come back around to the front. Now drop your finger, close your eyes, and let's do something. Just change what you're representing in your head. And here's how I want you to do it. I want you now to imagine in your mind that you're doing the same exact movement. Don't actually do it physically, but feel as if you're doing it. See it and feel it in your head as if you're actually doing it. Only this time, go twice as far and do it without any effort. So in your mind, feel yourself doing it. Don't actually do it, but feel as if you're doing it. And see and hear and feel yourself do it. And then do it three times. One time you go a little further. And to pretty soon you're going much further than you did before. Like at least 30% further. Maybe a lot more. And feel like yourself going all the way there and feel it totally comfortable and easy to do. Do it several times where you actually feel it happening. Now, open your eyes. Keep your feet together. Put your head ahead. And now, as far as you can, and look how much further you go this time. And then turn back around and have a seat. Now, how many of you, let me see a show of hands. How many of you went much further the second time? Raise your hand. Take a look around the room. Now, did your physical body develop new abilities? Shh. What we did was by having you create a clear experience in advance of going beyond your other limitations, you literally rigged up the circuitry in your brain to produce the result that you wanted. That's basically what goal setting is about. If you create goals in your mind that are clear enough, succinct enough, bright enough, and you actually experience them as being real, and you do it over and over again, you actually create the circuitry to make that situation occur. So your physical body can do a lot more if you just program in advance what you want and you change the limitation that you already hold in your representations. So I leave this just to hopefully stimulate your brain to think about maybe there's some beliefs that you have that maybe you want to start imaging beyond and then thereby create for yourself a new set of choices. So again, whether it be a Steven Spielberg, a Bruce Springsteen, a Ronald Reagan, a Bill Cosby, a John F. Kennedy, these people had passions I think you would all agree with, a passionate way of living. They all do and did. And they all had a tremendous level of belief in themselves and in people. Now, passion and belief are not enough. Because you can be all positive and excited, but that's not quite enough. You need the third element of a champion, and that is strategy. You've got to have a strategy for success as well. You can be all pumped up and passionate and believing, but if you're running east looking for a sunset, you've got a problem. I don't care how passionate, how much of a believer you are, and how many times you make pictures in your mind, it isn't going to happen. So you've got to understand that strategy means you must study how life is and do it that way. Strategy means find someone who is already getting the result that you want to produce and find out what they're doing and do the same things. It means don't reinvent the wheel. It means pay attention to what works. It means success leaves clues. One of my teachers taught me that long ago, and I never forgot it. He said, Tony, if you want anything in life, make it a study. He said, if you want to be successful, study success. If you want to be healthy, study health. If you want to be wealthy, study wealth. He said, make it a study. Do not leave it to chance. Do not hope things will get better, because hope does not make them better. Study and strategy does. And there is a strategy to do almost anything in life. And the bottom line is, right now, you may not be able to get a result where you are. But there's someone else on this planet who is getting that result. And if you study what they're doing closely enough, you're going to find out that you and they share one thing in common. You both have a brain and nervous system that functions basically the same way. You now need to learn to use your brain and use your nervous system the way they are, and you can get similar results. And I don't care what it is. It's not that difficult to do. So that's what modeling is about. Now, there are strategies for everything in life. We have strategies which are ways to motivate ourselves. And unfortunately for many of us, we have motivated ourselves. We had to use a strategy to do it, but we weren't aware of how we did it. Like probably up until this day, very few of you knew the importance of brightness and pictures in your head in terms of changing how you feel about your future. Now that seems like a very small thing, but when you start applying it on a daily basis, it becomes a very big thing. Now how did I discover that? You discover it by modeling strategies. You find somebody's happy, you start asking them questions, and we start to find out these people make brighter pictures. You find somebody's depressed, they're looking at something that should be positive, but it's dark. No wonder they're depressed. And we start making these distinctions by comparing people and finding out the differences in them. People have strategies for buying. Some people, in order to buy something, have to be shown certain things. Other people, you can show them until you're blue in the face. What they need to do is hear something. Other people don't need to see or hear. They just need to get a certain feeling in their gut. And if you are a person who's trying to show someone who needs to feel it in their gut, you are not going to be effective. If they buy, it will be in spite of you, not because of you. And what I want to do here before we're done, I'm not going to do it now, we'll come back to it, is I'm going to show you a little bit about people's buying strategies. So the minute somebody walks in the door, you can begin to identify how to communicate to them specifically as an individual, because we're all individuals and we all buy differently. And if all you do is just run something that you've learned over and over and over again, you're going to be very bored, number one. And number two, you're not going to be as effective as you could be. Okay? So each person's an individual, and I think most of you know that, but I want to talk to you real specifically about how those strategies work. But the bottom line is this. Anything another human being can do, so can you if you discover their strategy. Think of it in terms of like recipes. If I come to you and I say, I know John the Baker. He has spent 25 years of his life through trial and error until he has discovered how to make the best chocolate cake on the planet. And I come to you and say, can you make the same quality of chocolate cake? What would you say to me?
Yes.
Yes, you can, absolutely, if you know John's what? Also known as his strategy. What ingredients of his brain and of his body is he using in what order and sequence to get what result? And that's all that strategy is. And there are strategies for everything, and we want to investigate some of them. But just become aware of your own strategies. How do you get yourself to do things? Like, how many of you here have ever gotten yourself in a place where you absolutely didn't want to do something, but somehow you got yourself into a state where you could do it? How many of you have had that experience? Then the next time, instead of like struggling with, oh, God, I don't want to do this, what if you sat down and you said, okay, I've got myself to do this in the past. How did I do that? What did I picture? What did I say to myself? What was it that made me work this thing? Maybe you want to stop smoking, and at one time you had some other habit, and you stopped. Maybe you need to go back and find out how you stopped the first habit, and now you can use that same strategy in stopping this one, and it'll more than likely work for you. So again, it's paying attention to how we do things. Strategy is the how-to portion. Here's the fourth character trait of a champion. Clarity of values. Let me take a step back for a second. Does Bruce Springsteen have a strategy of how to communicate to his fans in a way that causes a large number of people to enjoy him? Absolutely. Does he have a strategy of how to use music and his body in a very definite and a pattern that's even noticeable? Yes or no? Does Ronald Reagan have a strategy for how to communicate to the culture that's been very effective, at least up until Iran situation? Has he had one? Absolutely. And he's trying to implement that strategy again now. Okay? Pardon me? Oh, God. I don't know if that's the exact strategy. The point is that people have specific ways of organizing the way they communicate, the way they use their minds and bodies to get a result. There is a fourth thing that all these people seem to share, whether it be Jane Fonda, Bill Cosby, Ronald Reagan, Pete Rose, Lee Iacocca, Donald Trump. All of these different individuals that I'm mentioning to you seem to have, in most of the culture's belief systems, very clear and specific values. And they seem to match a large number of people in the culture for the super successful individuals. I mean, when you think of Ronald Reagan, at least up until Iran, most people are pretty clear that they knew whatever he said, he really believed, and that he really did what he believed was right. How many of you still believe that, by the way? I'm curious. One hand? Two hands? Are you serious? How many of you do not believe that when Reagan says something now, he believes it? Let me see a show of hands. Wow. I've been asking these questions across the country. This is the first place I've seen this kind of result. Is it? Yeah, Midwest, they all go, yeah, I believe. Oh, you're dealing with intelligent people. That's the difference. Now I understand. Thank you for pointing that out. The point, though, is that in terms of the same thing with Bruce Springsteen, all of his songs and so forth are around certain human values, and that's what attaches people to them. People love and respect a person who sticks by what they believe is right. That's what people in this culture really respect most. One of the things, and I'm not just giving this for a stroke, but one of the things that I was impressed with in talking here was the values that were described to this company were very precise, very specific, and very passionate. Honesty is number one. We have to be totally honest in communicating. Service, we'll do whatever it takes. If there's any question, we take it out. Those values are the essence of this company. IBM has become the company that they are and had moved to the marketplace to the point that they are because they had specific values that they have made sure that the company had, but obviously that the people who are the company live by. And that's the reason they have succeeded. An individual in life only succeeds long term if they live by their own values. Now, what are values? Values are nothing but your own internal belief systems about what you believe is right and wrong, what you should or should not do, what your life represents or does not represent. If you violate what you believe is right for you in your life, you get a tremendous amount of pain because who does the punishing? You do. When you are living what you believe is most important in your life and making progress towards what you believe is most important in your life, what kind of state are you? A great state, ecstasy, passion, happiness. Now, for most people in this culture, most people are not clear about what their values really are. They know a couple brief ideas. Well, I think it's important to grow. I think it's important to do something. But they're not very specific. As a result, many people in this culture are very, very unhappy because they are not making progress to what they, in their unconscious mind, believe is most important in their life. When people feel this vague sense of dissatisfaction or lack of satisfaction, what begins to happen is they don't like those feelings and they try and change their states. And what are some of the ways people try and change states when their values are not being met and they have this dissatisfaction and they don't know why? What are some of the ways? Again, we go drugs, alcohol, overeating. If someone's overeating, over drinking, over anything, I can guarantee you that they're doing it to try and change states, and the basic core of that will come down to the fact that they are not living or progressing towards what they think is most important in life. And they may not even believe it can ever happen. Or they may not even know what they believe is right, so they have no direction. They're not making any progress, so that's where those feelings come from that they want to get rid of, and so they try and push them out. Or they go watch TV. When you watch TV, it changes your internal what? Yeah, and changes your internal representations, what you're representing, and so it changes how you feel. So watching television is another way to change your state, isn't it? So the bottom line, though, is people are trying to change states because they're not feeling fulfilled, because they're not living what they believe is most important to them. Now, how does this relate to you, and how does this relate to sales? Well, one is, obviously, for you to be happy, you've got to make sure that what you're doing daily, you get to clearly associate and see how that relates to what's most important in your life. Ira obviously has that. I tell you, his values are real clear, and you probably already know them. Family is obviously really important to him. Team is obviously very important to him. Having fun is obviously very important to him. Honesty is obviously very important to him. Reputation is obviously very important to him. Those are a series of values that I got listening to him for 1 minute, okay? And those values are very important to him, and he seems to be a very happy man, primarily because he has found a way to make his vocation something that fulfills all those values. On a daily basis, he can measure in his emotions progress towards most of those areas. He's happy in being here. You can see he's excited about being here because one of his values is family, and this feels like his family's all here together. So he's feeling very happy because one of his values is being met here. As long as I do a good job, he's going to be very happy because what he's doing is one of the things he wants is growth for himself and for you. So if somehow I can stimulate you to cause yourself to grow, then he's going to be very happy because another one of his values is being met. Now, you have values that may be similar that you share with him, and you may have some that are also different. There's nothing wrong with that. But what you have to be able to do is see that your daily work is contributing to something higher than just making sales or making an income or making a bunch of money, unless making a bunch of money is like one of your highest values, which is possible. But there are other values that need to be met as well. And when you feel like all your values are being met by something, then you automatically have passion. Then you automatically have strength. Then you automatically excel. Now, how do you find out what someone's values are? Well, you ask them. And the way you ask them is real simple. You turn to somebody and you say something like, "Sir, what's the most important thing to you in life?" I like asking simple questions. Yeah. What's your name?
Jeff.
Jeff. What's the most important thing to you in life, Jeff?
Family.
Family. Can't imagine how you feel about this organization. Now, this gentleman here, with that as his number one value, is he going to feel happy in this organization overall? Yes or no?
Yeah.
You bet he is. I mean, he's going to be at home here. That's one of the things that's going to be attractive about this organization. His number one value is starting to be fulfilled.
This is the end of side one. Please turn the tape over at this point to play side two.
What's important to you about family? Being with them. Great. What else is real important to you besides family? Making money. Does it sound like he's in a business where his values can be met pretty strongly? What's really important about making money to you?
Having fun.
Does he sound like he get along? Does he sound like he get along with Ira so far?
No.
Family, making money, fun. What else is really important to you? Speeding in Porsches. Okay. What else is really important to you? That covers most everything. So if this man has a sense of family that he's with them, that he's making money, we have to find out how much and so forth, and he's having fun, and this gentleman here is going to feel pretty fulfilled, isn't he? Yeah. What if he would have said that his number one value was independence? Okay, it's possible it could still be filled in this organization. What if his idea of independence, though, was that he was never around anyone else and didn't have to cooperate? Is he going to have a few challenges at times?
Yeah,
now if he has all these other values also, then it's going to balance out still. Okay? But if his number one value was that he was independent, and independent meant to him that he didn't have to cooperate with anyone, and family wasn't really major for him, okay, then he's going to have a whole different level of relationship with this organization. Okay? Let me ask somebody else. Or just raise your hand and tell me, what's most important to you in life? A couple people here, if you would. Yes, sir. Family, great. What's really important to you about family? Closeness, great. What do you like about this organization? And he feels like what? His family. Do you understand why he's happy in this organization? His number one value is being met. Interesting. And by the way, did I tell you these values before I asked them from the people in the group? Of course, because I found out his values in a minute. By asking him, I said, what's the most important thing to you in life? What's important about that? What's important about that? And I got three or four of them. What's important about business? He told me when I said, what's important? He lays all his values out like that. Most people do. Somebody else tell me, what's really most important to you? It doesn't have to be family. Tell me what it is. Pardon me? Blackjack. What's important about blackjack?
Winning.
So maybe a person has winning as their number one value. Is that possible? Of course it is. Okay. Now, is it important what, for example, these are values. So we get all these values. Let's say that, for example, we take these values right here. Family, making money, fun. Do you think it makes a difference which order these are in terms of which one's more important to this person? Will that determine this person's behavior in the long term? You bet it does. If making money is number one, and fun is number two, and family is number three, is that person in the long run going to probably behave differently than somebody who has family, making money, and fun? Yeah, I can guarantee you that this man in an organization where there's no sense of family and only making money is not going to feel totally fulfilled. Now, in addition, since family's here, if it comes down to it between making money or being with his family, in the short term, he may go for making money. But over the long term of his life, he's going to always go back for family. If he has to make a choice. Do you understand the distinction? Because that's number one in importance for his life. If making money was number one and family was number three, then he will choose money situations, like he'll go work instead of be with his family more consistently. Now, at any time, we can go for a lower value than our highest one. We can subjugate the values. But if we do it for a long period of time and we don't feel like those higher values are being met, that's when the frustration happens. That's when we get eaten up inside because we're like just trying to make money, but we're not taking care of our number one value. And then what happens is we feel rotten inside, and then either we change or we go do things to change how we feel, like I talked about earlier. Okay? People have values in carpeting. And you got to ask them what they want, which is basic, isn't it? You know, what are you looking for, some people say. Some people aren't looking, though. Some people are listening. Some people are coming to feel. But if you find out what someone's number one value is, you can relate what they're buying to that, and then what they're buying becomes more valuable. If I'm going to sell this man carpeting, I can tell you one thing that I'm going to talk to him about, or two, is that how he's going to save what? Money, because making money is important, so saving is going to be. But most importantly, I'm going to focus on how this carpet's going to affect his. And by the way, if I do that, is this carpet going to become have more meaning to him than if I just talk to him about this kind of weave and the quality of it and our service? What if I tell him about all of our service? We have the best service, and if it doesn't work, we'll take it out, and all that stuff. That is not going to have anywhere near the impact, because if I know family's number one, and I say, you know what, think about how your family's going to feel when they sit on this carpet. Or when you see this, or whatever. You've got to find out what he's looking for. Seeing, touching, feeling. But if you relate it to his highest value, you're going to have a lot more power. What if somebody said their number one value is freedom? And they're coming in to buy carpet. That's right. You're laughing. If their number one value in life is freedom, what are you going to probably emphasize when you're talking about the carpeting? It frees up. It's no problem. It's easy. You don't have to spend any time and all those kinds of things. It frees you to other things. Guess how attractive that carpeting becomes when you relate what they're buying to the highest value of their life. You think that's fairly powerful instead of just rotely going through and asking, well, what kind of color and shape and all that stuff. See, I'm not saying don't do that too. I'm saying while you're doing it, you can talk to people. Can you have enough rapport with people as you're talking to them and you're talking about carpeting and you say something to them like, what's most important to you in life, and make a joke of it and say, I like asking simple questions? If you have enough rapport, can you ask that kind of question, yes or no? Absolutely. If you know this information, think of the power you have in your presentation. Plus, you know what you're really doing? You're feeling their deepest need. Because people are always looking for ways to make their values feel like they're being fulfilled. If you can show them how doing this is helping to fulfill a higher value, you're not just giving them a great carpet, but you're giving them a sensation inside of their body that they're striving for their whole life. That's kind of nice. Then you go beyond becoming a salesperson, and you really go to someone who's really feeling a person's deepest needs. And when you do that, you don't have to worry about getting more sales. That's how referrals come. That's how you really build your business. Now, I do want to show you one more thing about how hierarchies of values, meaning the ladder of what's most important, affects behavior. Let's do it in a relationship, just so you get an idea of something for your own personal life. Let me pick somebody here. How about this lady right here? What's your name? Dinah? Tell me, what's most important to you in a personal relationship? Love. What's important to you about love?
Feelings.
Okay, great. What kind of feelings it gives you. What else is really important to you in a relationship besides love? Don't be nervous. We're all just waiting to hear your exact values so we can... We're just... Companionship. Companionship, tenderness. Devotion. Loyalty. Well, it's pretty clear her values, aren't they? Strong relationship between them. What else? Is sex important to you? Does that belong on the list?
Depends.
Okay. Sex on the bottom of the list here.
Honesty.
Okay. Honesty. Anything else? Other people saying, well, she's leaving out this. No, you're saying your values, not hers. Yeah. Okay, we could do those. Now, we want to find out which of these are most important. So it appears that love might be, all you do is you compare them to find out the order. So I say, what's more important to you, love or companionship? Love or tenderness? Love or devotion? Love or loyalty? Love or honesty? Now we're getting into the crux here of the values.
Honesty?
Are you sure? Think about it before you answer. Love, yeah. Love or sex?
Love.
That wasn't a hard choice, was it? So love is number one. Okay? Companion. Now look what we do. Now we know love is the top one. Now we compare companionship or tenderness. Watch her brain when I ask some of these questions, because something's going to be hard for her. Companionship or tenderness? Tenderness or devotion? Devotion. Devotion or loyalty? Devotion. Okay, see, once she thought of the meaning, do you see how quickly she could decide? Devotion or honesty? Honesty. Honesty or sex? Do you see how we did this? What we're doing is we're comparing them. Did you notice we compare them? And if she picks one over the other one, we don't have to go back. If she, we said companionship or tenderness. She said tenderness. I said tenderness or devotion. She said devotion. I didn't have to go and go devotion or companionship. Why didn't I have to do that? Because tenderness was above companionship and devotion's above tenderness, so it's obviously above both. So honesty, then devotion. Now I come back and I go tenderness or loyalty. Loyalty. Loyalty or companionship. Could you have guessed that based on other values? Probably. Tenderness or loyalty or sex?
Loyalty.
No kidding. We're finding out a lot about your life, you know? Companionship or tenderness? Companionship or sex? Tenderness or sex?
Are you ready?
Hey! You like it to be hard with you, not soft in the description, huh? Okay, tenderness, okay. So here is this woman's values. Now, let me ask you a question. Yes. One second. These words represent her hierarchy of needs and values in a relationship. How much do you know about this woman right now? Could you generate... What you know is that all these things are important to her, but they're important in a level of hierarchy. Sex is important, tenderness is important, but it's in the level of its importance compared to other things. If she does not feel love, will sex matter a whole lot to her? No. This is the core. If this is not fulfilled, she doesn't care much about this. If there isn't honesty in this relationship, is she going to be able to stay in this relationship? Probably. It's going to be tough if she doesn't believe there's honesty. Unless there's just so much love that it somehow overcomes it. But the truth is, even if there's great loyalty in her mind and there's companionship and great sex, but there's not honesty, the relationship will probably not last. Or if she stays in the relationship for some other reason, like children or something like that, it will eat her alive. Now, I'm telling you that because I know how her brain functions now, because I know exactly how that computer is operating. Now, I don't know what these words mean, though. For her idea of love and my idea of love, maybe two different things, right? So you'd have to say to her, well, what does love mean to you, or how do you know when you're loved? Because you have to know not only what her value is, but what would be important for her husband to know is, how does she know when she's loved? Because he may be thinking he's making her feel loved, and she may not feel as loved as she could at times. What makes you feel most loved? How do you know when you're loved? You understand how this woman is going to discover whether that value is being met now. So you better make sure you're doing things that put her before you if she's going to feel totally loved. He says, that's how I live, no problem. Okay? Honesty. Obviously, this isn't their relationship, but wouldn't last for 24 years. How do you know when somebody's honest?
She knows.
She feels it. Third one we had here was devotion. How do you know when your husband is devoted to you? You know when he's not devoted to you. Well, that's a nice evidence procedure. How do you know when he's not? He's stupid? Well, you're building lots of rapport right now. Shh. What makes you know that he's devoted? Like, what kind of actions does he take? What kind of behavior does he have when he's being devoted? Showing of caring. Boy, showing of caring is pretty important for her, isn't it? Also, you think it's important in a business? If you want this woman to be happy? She also needs to be shown the same value. She has to feel loved in the business, feel like there's honesty in the business. You think this is probably well met by this organization? A sense of devotion to the employees? How about loyalty? How do you know when somebody's loyal? They're there for you, what, in times of need or what? They're there all the time. They're available to you, is that what you mean? How do you know when they're there? Emotionally. So we go through a whole list and we can find out what it's going to take for her to feel fulfilled in all these areas. If she's getting that fulfillment in those areas, the woman is going to be absolutely in ecstasy in her life. And let me ask you a question. With these sets of values that she has, let me finish the list here. I'll do them on a fresh page here. I want to compare something here so you can see how behaviors vary. This woman's got love, honesty, devotion, loyalty, companionship, sex, and tenderness. Let me show you a woman's values I just did the other day in a business. Number one value, passion. Number two, ecstasy. Number three, outrageousness. Number four, fun. Number five, what was her fifth one? Let's see, passion, ecstasy, outrageousness, fun. Excuse me, I'm sorry. Passion, ecstasy, outrageousness, fun. Oh, okay. Gold card. These are the things she had to have in a relationship. She had one where it said, easy to be with, and then her last one was honesty. Now, let me ask you a question. Are her behaviors probably going to be different than her behaviors? You would say so. I turn to this woman and I say, everybody's laughing, and she goes, well, this is what it is. I said, well, how do you know when you have passion? She said, well, when we make love a lot in a relationship. I said, what's a lot? She says, well, I don't know, once or twice a day. I said, like, every day? She said, yes, every day. I said, well, what if it only happens, like, two or three times a week? She goes, and there's no passion. I said, how do you know when you have ecstasy? She says, well, that when we grab each other and touch each other, we squeeze tight. Okay, tight. This guy's going, where is this woman? He wants to meet her. I said, how do you know when you're outrageous? She says, when we do things spontaneously for no reason. I said, how do you know when you're having fun? She goes, when we laugh a lot. I said, how do you know he's got a gold card? She goes, I check his wallet. You know? How do you know when you're easy to get along with? She said, when you can be relaxed. How do you know when he's honest? She said, well, when he tells you something and he does it. I said, great. I said, based upon what I can see here, I can tell you things about your life, and I can read into your future probably pretty accurately. For example, by looking at these values, I can see that there have been probably times in your life when you were with the guy who was fun and had money, he was easy to be with, and he was honest, But you either didn't stay in the relationship or you cheated on him because he didn't create passion and somebody else did. And she said, that's true. He said, I'm in a relationship like that now. I said, I bet there have also been times when you were the person in a relationship where you were, they created tremendous passion and ecstasy for you and they were outrageous. They weren't totally fun, but pretty fun. They didn't have a gold card. They weren't easy, and they lied to you on a regular basis, but even though you didn't like that, you stayed in relationship with them. And she said, that's true, too. I just broke up with one of those. Now, why do we know this? Because we know how this brain functions. Does that mean she could never choose, for example, honesty over passion? No, it doesn't mean she could never do it. It just means in the long run, this is where she's going to come back to. So I bring this up because I want you to become conscious of your own values. How do you find out someone's values? You ask them a simple question. What's the question? What's most important to you about blank? If you want to know their values in business, you just ask them, what's most important to you in business? And they'll say, I don't know. And you say, I know you don't know. But if you did know, and they go, well, profit. What else is important to you? Honesty. What else is important to you? Winning. Okay? Then you go to another person. What's most important? And you find out the order. And let's say profit's one, winning's two, and honesty's three. You go to another person, you go, what's most important? They go, team, fun, growing. Are these two people going to have the same way of interacting? No. You go, how do you know when you're profiting? And he says, well, I'm profiting when I make more money than I did in the past. How do you know when you're winning? When I get the better deal in the relationship. How do you know when the person's honest? When they do what I tell them. Okay? This person, team, both win when it's a win-win situation, when I feel like they won and I won. Fun, when we have fun, when we're happy while we're doing it. Growth, when I learn from the experience whether it worked or not. Are these two going to be real compatible in a business situation? No, what's going to happen is this guy's going to be upset because this guy's just into the money and he's not into the what? Team. And this guy over here is going to go, I don't give a damn about your team. I got to be profitable. And you know what? Are values highly emotional topics? Yeah, everything that goes on in this world that people are upset about is values. If you ever find yourself getting really angry, I guarantee you a standard, that's all a value is, a standard that you have has been violated. Somebody did something that doesn't work in your value system, and that's why you got upset. And a lot of times what happens is you got people with similar values, but they don't do what that person thinks needs to happen for that value to be met. Like for one person to feel loved, you got to put yourself second to them. And maybe your idea of expressing love is, no, that you both are mutual. And so they don't feel loved even though you both have love as a value. So, again, my purpose here is to stimulate you. Here would be an assignment for you, a challenge for you, if you're willing to take it on. Tonight, at some point, before this day has passed and you've forgotten about some of the things we talked about, sit down, take out a piece of paper, and ask yourself the simple question, what's most important to me in life? And just make a list of the words, the states, the emotions that you want. And then begin to compare them until you find out what's most important, second, third, and fourth. It'll blow your mind, because once you have clarity of that, it'll help make your decision-making a lot easier. Okay? Second thing to do then is find out, what would it take for me to feel like these values are being met? A third assignment, if you're willing to go for it and really want to learn something, is sit down with a person you have a relationship with and ask them what's most important to you in a relationship and find out their values like we just did with her. Because I'll tell you something, anytime you enter into a relationship with someone, whether it be for 5 minutes or 5 years or 50 years, you've entered into a contract where you are beginning to evaluate each other based upon your own values. When somebody walks in that store and they see you, they instantly start to evaluate you based on their values. By the way you dress, by the way you talk to them, by the way the tone of your speech, they make decisions about who you are in those first 5 minutes that are going to have an impact on that wholesale situation. So we're going to show you now about how to create more rapport with them, but also you want to think about, in relationships you want to know them, and in business you don't have to do the whole hierarchy. You can ask a question. You can turn to that person, you can say, sir, what's most important to you in a relationship with a carpet company? Or what's most important to you in investing? Or what's most important to you in whatever? And they'll give you two or three things, and you make sure you use those catchwords in your communication. Okay? So if I'm going to talk with Ira here and I want to have rapport, what kinds of things I'm going to talk about? From what you know. Family, what else? Honesty, what else? Team? Sports, it sounds like a value. I don't know that he has, but I now know he has. So if I talk about those things, and I'm talking about how important things are, you know, and he and I share the same values. I didn't know that before I got here, but I was excited, and the reason I got excited about being here is in the first minute, he names all these values. For me, one of my highest values is team. He's naming all these things, and all of a sudden, I like Ira. Why do I like him? Because he's like who? Yeah, so obviously he's intelligent. Okay? We share the same values, so we have a likeness. When people have different values, what happens? There's a lack of rapport. I mean, if we look at the Middle East right now, what's the challenge there? We've got people who have a different value structures, different ways of having those values met, and so they're fighting like crazy. Okay? So values is a topic we could do a whole seminar on. What I hope you'll do from here is sit down and find out your own values, number one. Second, sit down with a relationship. It'd be invaluable to discover. And third, from this day forward, when somebody walks in, after you develop rapport, it's fun to discover what people's values are. Ask them questions like, what's most important to you about, you know, getting this carpet? What's most important in your life? And begin to find out and relate what they're buying to the most important things in their lives, and you won't believe what will happen to your sales. Value selling is the most powerful selling that you can do. Okay? Here's number five. Number five on our list is called bonding power. Bonding power.
For bonding power, or rapport, please refer to tape 2, The Magic of Rapport.
Here's number 6. Just real quickly, of these 7 fundamentals. Number 1 was what? Passion. Number 2 was? Number 3? Number 4? Number 5? Number 6 is, after you have all these things, there's one thing you can't go without. And that's called energy. You've got to have energy. Energy. There's nothing like energy to absolutely impact another person. Because when you have a tremendous amount of energy, does it impact their state of mind? You bet it does. In fact, there's a lot to be said for some basic things that we all know are true, and it's worthy of reminding ourselves. Enthusiasm is the most powerful emotions and states you can be in. Enthusiasm is catchy. Enthusiasm and passion I put side by side. The word enthusiasm, by the way, from the Greek root means entheos. It means godlike. And when you're being enthusiastic, you're being godlike, and people love it. How do you get energy? Well, one way you've already learned today, act physically like you have energy, and you'll actually develop it. The other thing you've got to do is make sure that you're living a lifestyle that gives you the additional energy that you actually need. And so there are lots of ways to do that, and I'm not going to go through those. We do a whole health seminar. You can get books. There are lots of ways to know how to take care of yourself physically. But there are some simple things that you should know that can make a big difference. Number one is how you breathe impacts your energy level more than anything else, your breathing pattern. And most people in life tend, when they get stressed, to stop what?
Breathing.
And that creates even more stress because it's very hard to function without air. One of the things you want to become conscious of is throughout the day taking deep diaphragmic breaths. In fact, let's try one right now. We take a deep breath from your stomach all the way up and you hold it. Go ahead. And hold it for a second. And then exhale slowly. And feel what it does in your body. Okay, do another one. Nice deep breath in. And then exhale slowly. Now, that's one way of breathing and relaxing. Is there a way of breathing that would create more energy? Take a deep breath in and blow it out as hard as you can. No, not quite like that. Okay. You got to take it out. When you blow it out, you have to move your body strongly as you do it. Take a deep breath in and strongly blow it out. Okay, when you do it, you got to blow from your stomach out your mouth. Okay? Try it again. Deep breath in. Blow it out. If you're just blowing outward, you won't feel energy. But if you're blowing it out right from your gut out your mouth long enough to where there's no air, you'll feel an additional strength. There are lots of ways to do it. All I would ask you to do on number 6 is do what you know is right or get some more information. Take care of yourself physically because your body is the vehicle that you're trying to get all these values and emotions through. And if there isn't resources there, if that physical body is run down, then obviously you're trying to run this great goal, this great dream, and there's not going to be a way to get to it. So you've got to take care of it. That's all I'm going to say about energy. And the last one I've already talked about, number 7, is called mastery of human communication. See, how you feel in your life is not determined by what happens to you in life. How you feel in your life is determined by how you communicate to yourself. We talked a little bit about this earlier, didn't we? See, if someone leaves you in a personal relationship, you totally love this person, they break up and leave you, what does that mean? It means your relationship's over, it means you're terrible, it means you're sad, it means what? You're dying, this woman said. This woman says you're rejected. What does it actually mean? It only means what you communicate to yourself. See, if you communicate to yourself the reason they left is you weren't good enough, you weren't strong enough, you weren't pretty enough, you're probably going to feel pretty lousy. Now, maybe you weren't. Maybe you need to work on yourself. But communicating how terrible you are to yourself is not going to make things better. I'll give you an idea. This woman calls me up on a radio show once and tells me that her boyfriend just left her and she's all depressed. And she went through all this stuff about how depressed she was. And I said, but why are you depressed? And she said, because my boyfriend left me. And I said, but why are you depressed? She said, because my boyfriend left me. Didn't you hear me? I said, yes, but why are you depressed? I was making my point, right? And she said, because my boyfriend left me. And I said, no, ma'am, you're not upset because your boyfriend left you. You're upset because of what you're saying to yourself and picturing about why he left you or what your future life's going to be like. She goes, yeah, he left me because I'm not good enough and I don't have a future. I said, ma'am, I can appreciate the intense negative feelings you have, but if you were to change the way you're communicating to yourself right now, it would totally change your future behavior and your future and change how you feel right now. He said, what do you suggest I do? I feel overwhelmed. I feel terrible. I feel so bad inside. I said, I want you to go outside right now, and I want you to take all that emotion, all that feeling, and I want you to scream, and I want you to shout, and I want you to yell just one word, the word, next. And she started giggling like crazy, and while she was giggling, guess what I said? Think about your boyfriend leaving. And while she's living, I said, think about your boyfriend leaving. And while she's giggling, I said, think about your boyfriend leaving. I did it about 5 times. So then when she started thinking about her boyfriend leaving, it caused her to what? Because I got her to associate the two, just like advertisers do. So I said, think about your boyfriend leaving. She goes, ah! Now, I'm not making, I'm not trying to belittle the relationship, but out of a level of laughter, she can make herself better. She can look at the relationship from a different place, and she's a lot more resourceful than beating herself up, isn't she? It's called mastering your communication with yourself. If you want joy, if you want happiness, if you want love, all those things are not the result of what happens in your life, but rather how you communicate to you. Because you can have everything going right and still feel lousy. Lots of people have proven that, haven't they? You can also have almost nothing going right and still feel great. And lots of people have proven that also. Because the bottom line, how you feel emotionally, your internal success in life is how you communicate to yourself. And NLP has thousands of strategies on how to master your communication and reprogram it. But if you want external success, if you want to be a success in life, if you want to be able to influence your children more than the crack salesman, now, if you really want to have an impact in life, then you must also master not only how you communicate to yourself, but how you communicate to other people. You know, an Eastern culture says, just go inside and communicate to yourself in a way that makes you happy. A Western culture tends to say, pay attention to the outside. I say, pay attention to both. If you want internal success, watch how you communicate to yourself. If you want external success, master human communication skills in the external world. The only difference between my life now and where I was 4 years ago is I'm a better communicator. And I communicate about ideas that make a difference in how other people communicate. And as a result, their lives get better as well. And so it comes back to me. So that process of external communication allowed me to have the external success I didn't have before. And the process of internal communication gave me the sense of substance and joy about my life that I didn't have before. This is the difference in people's lives. This is the difference between the friend I told you about in Vietnam who came out healthy and happy and strong and John Belushi, who I really enjoyed a lot. But obviously a guy who didn't master his communication to himself. He was great as an external communicator, wasn't he? But he didn't take care of communicating to himself properly, so to change his states of unhappiness, he used drugs, and unfortunately, no longer here because he overdosed. See, there's no more important thing than mastering your communication. So these 7 simple things are at least a foundation to push in a direction that by making yourself stronger, more impactful in your communication skills, can allow you not only make your job more effective, but make your life much more enjoyable.